Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Coach's Corner. I'm Coach Andrew Poritz from Ingenuity Coaching. I help people discover and fulfill their passions and greatness. My mission, to inspire and challenge you to dream big dreams, and with my coaching, help you to manifest those dreams into reality. You can visit my website at myfuturecoach.com and follow me on Twitter at Coach Andrew. If you're listening live and you have a question, the phone number here in the studio is 646-929-2893. You'll be able to listen to the show on the phone, and if you press number one, I'll know you have a question. We also have a live chat room right on the show page where you can feel free to join in. My guest tonight is Sarah Rippard, the creator, executive producer, and host of a new television talk show called Being Mom with Sarah Rippard, an entirely different TV talk show hybrid. She's also the author of her upcoming book, Leading Edge Parenting, 9 Steps to Consider Before Becoming a Parent, a simple yet profound parenting perspective containing 9 chapters of thought-provoking questions that challenge, empower, and transform individuals to gain a deeper understanding of themselves and their partner as they begin their sacred journey of being parents. You can learn more about Sarah at www.beingmom.tv. Sarah, are you with me?
Yes, I am, Andrew. Thank you so much. It's such an honor to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you. And I see you brought your Bronx accent with you.
Oh, you know, one has to fake an accent. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, it's the one I'm stuck with, although my relatives in England would say I've become ever so Americanized. So,
ever
and
so,
I say,
eh?
Ever so, yes. And I say, what's wrong with that?
That's right. Welcome to my world, see?
Oh, you see?
Yeah. So being mom, this is now this is an unusual situation for me because usually when I have somebody who has a book or about to have a book, I usually get at least a peek at it. I get some chapters. I get to read. I usually read every word that somebody has written before I have them on my show because I want to be able to have a conversation about their book from the point of view of somebody who has read it. So I can't do that because it's not ready. And I'm okay with that.
Well, I think what I can share with you tonight will give your listeners and, of course, yourself quite an insight into what the book will be discovering for people who are thinking of becoming parents. And quite honestly, it's not really just for parents. It's really for every human being on the planet because the questions that are posed in the book are there to inspire the highest plane of, I think, where we want to go as global citizens. Our conversation tonight will definitely highlight many of the points that will be in the book itself.
Okay, great. So I'm hoping that somebody will walk away from this thinking, I need to read that book when it comes out.
That's what I'm hoping.
And do you have a target date for that to happen?
Well, we're hoping by the end of the year, and so you know, it's been quite a process, as anyone who has ventured to write a book could attest. And you know, because we're launching our show at the same time. And so there's a lot going on, and actually it's been kind of, I do believe that that the universe gives us signs, and if we pay attention to them, hopefully we can gain a better understanding of what we're doing and where we're going. And I think actually building the show, which we're going to talk about as well, has helped to inform me better as an author and as a translator of some of the information I'm going to be writing in the book. So in a way, it was a blessing in disguise not to rush the production of the book. And I think the audience or the readers will get a better, more textual insight into what I'll be discussing and bringing up with Leading Edge Parenting, the 9 steps to consider before becoming a parent.
Right. Now, I may not be a parent, but you can see right through me.
Well, I think what's really interesting about being mom, and it's being mom with yours truly, with Sarah Rippard. People have asked, what would make this a relevant show? And what is it that you're going to be showing us that maybe we couldn't read in a bunch of magazines?
Mm-hmm.
We're not trying to, being mom is not really here to solve the world's problems in terms of thinking we sort of have this godlike platform. However, it is going to be really interesting and relevant to the lives of all people, regardless of whether they are parents or not, because it's really about shifting the way we evolve on a daily basis. And I love what my husband sort of coined. It's really a parenting philanthropy that we're going to be giving as we really seek to shift an evolutionary parenting paradigm shift that affects everyone. Because when you think of the lives of every human being, every human being on this planet lives their lives, acts out their choices as a direct result of how they were parented, the environment they were raised in, which really sets in motion the programs of how our brains become wired up now. And what we're going to be doing on Being Mom is to be able to give the tools, the perspective, and the equation of, why is it that I do what I do? Why is it that I think the way I think? Some of it serves me, some of it doesn't serve me. And I think what I have found in my experience when I've been listening to a lot of different groups of people who are struggling with certain ideas and ideals every day is this idea that sometimes they feel they're crazy and they can't figure out what it is. And they actually don't connect the dots one by one that go back to the root of their birth story, how they were conceived, what their initial first 7 years of life were really like. And what's really astonishing with this, when you look at the deep impressions that are left in ourselves, we all learn lessons from our early years. But sometimes what we don't recognize is the immense trauma that is left in the cells of our very being, the very biology, the very neurobiology, that we're learning so much more about the brain and how it works and how our early experiences impact us. So with Being Mom, and what I'm going to be talking about in the book as well, is that it's not about perfection. It's about striving to better our lives. It's about striving to better our understanding of where we are so we can live the most fulfilled life, not just with our children, but with a partner, in a friendship, with our parents. I mean, you can go on and on and on. So what I found in my experience, as I've talked with hundreds and just thousands of different people, as I've been connecting the Being Mom community and the audience, is that a lot of times we think we have a problem, and of course, we try to understand it. And sometimes what I found is missing is that there is an absolute part of our being that does not directly relate it to a trauma that we may not necessarily remember right now. So if you think you're crazy, you're not making it up. I mean, there might have been something that may have happened to you earlier on that you may have either put in your subconscious, you may have covered it up because, we all deal with trauma in different ways. So what this show is accessing, what Being Mom is going to access, is to be able to give you the tools. And I actually think, and we call it, going to be talking about preconception and pre- and perinatal psychology, which is what's happening in the womb when we're being formed, and also what's happening even before that. So really, we become parents, or we become self-regulating, balanced human beings before we ever have children. So when you look at a child that's been, say, raised in an abusive home, or you look at a child that's been raised in a more optimal environment, they're already forming their impressions of the world. And if they do go on to have a productive life, hopefully, that's the wish for every human being, or if they go on to be parents, we are seeing the formation already of how their choices, actions, and behavior are going to be playing out for the rest of their lives.
Right.
Now, this is not to say we get stuck in a trauma. Sometimes it can be that for many people. They just, for whatever reasons, never seem to either seek the help, the guidance, or be able to have the ability to hopefully evolve from whatever situation they're in. So this is not about saying, well, I didn't have an optimal childhood, so does that mean I'm damned? Does that mean I'm doomed?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. Because what we've learned about the brain and how it's wiring up, and it's called, they're called mirror neurons. And obviously, these mirror neurons are extremely powerful when we're wiring up at a very early age, in the womb, in the first 7 years, and in our, you know, formative years as teenagers. But that doesn't mean that it stops there. These mirror neurons are very powerful because we can make conscious choices to shift how we behave with, you know, repetition, being in a certain environment, being around a community that supports the desires and the choices we want to make. And that's what we're going to be talking about on Being Mom. I mean,
okay.
And I think what's going to be really important to note here is that we're not just focusing on mothers, we're focusing on men as well. We're going to be really looking at how our societies function in their separate roles. Because we have, in my ever so humble opinion, I think the voice of the father, even though it's called, don't be fooled that it's called Being Mom, the operative word here is really the being aspect. I'm just the vessel of the information, because the being is really being used as an adjective and not as a verb. So it's being mom, being dad, being superhero, being entrepreneur, being all these many different roles. And when we talk about roles, one of the things we're going to be actually going into rather heavily is the role of the male, the role of the father. When we look at studies that are being done and have been done for the last 15, 20 years, it's really shocking of the transformation of what a lot of our men are going through,
right,
whether they're fathers or not. And so we're going to be focusing, you know, the essential roles and pressures of men and fathers and the difficulty they have relating to their children. And why is this happening? You know, because every aspect of a child's life, male or female, every aspect spills into our everyday society. So, you know, what was once a child will become an adult.
Of course.
And so, of course, right? And so what kind of adult are we bringing into the world? How are they self-regulating?
Mm-hmm.
And we're really going to be honoring the voice of the man and the fathers. We're going to be working
with
them.
Well, as a man, I am very, very happy to hear that you are going to be including us in your show.
Absolutely.
I would like to ask you also, you know, before we get too far, because I've been really wanting to ask this for a little bit, but could you give me a little bit about your background and what brings you, like, what, how did you get to all this stuff? What's, you know, where's your knowledge base?
Absolutely. Well, I come from a fourth generation of a performing family and also a social activism family.
Mm-hmm.
So on my Maltese side, which is on my father's side, and on my mother's side too, they were all involved in nursing and caring for mentally sick patients. And my father, actually, and my grandmother on my father's side, they were rather instrumental in changing the laws of how we look at mental illness. So I grew up around this energy. And also, too, when I was 9 years old, I knew I wanted to be a mother. I didn't know when. I didn't know how. I also was the product of a not-so-pleasant divorce. So when you go through a divorce, you really witness yourself outside of yourself, in a sense. And I thought, this just doesn't feel right. Why is this happening? And sort of not to get too sort of spiritually based in all of this, I felt that there was something bigger about how we are in relation to children and our parents. And we have our histories, and I come from quite a a variety of different cultural influences. So I saw parenting and human behavior from quite extreme cultures, and it became my passion to understand, and also I wanted to self-evolve.
Right.
I wanted to say, this cannot be it. You know, I don't believe we're put on this planet just to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And so there began my intense study of bettering my own psyche. My spiritual path became the cornerstone of really how I live my life. I'm not a religious person, but I believe in truth-seeking. I have read so many different books. I think I'm sure that myself and your listeners, we probably have some of the same people that we're attracted
mm-hmm.
to as mentors. And I started looking at parenting. And what is extraordinary to me is that we live in the world and we spend so much time, for example, looking for a car, researching that, going to a great school, you know, researching a job. Maybe we're preparing for the nursery, for the baby, or whatever it is, buying a house, buying a car. But what we don't really do in terms of as a study, to me, is one of the most important subjects, and that is being a parent. Because
mm-hmm.
whether you are a parent or not, you come from parents.
Sure.
You've been raised by parents or caregivers who then became your role models as parents. And it's striking to me that it is a discussion that, first of all, I never understood how controversial parenting topics actually are. It is stunning what I've gone through in the last few years.
Why do you suppose that is?
Because I think it brings up an immediate reaction in the person who may be receiving the information that I have somehow failed. Are you saying I'm a bad parent?
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that I'm screwing my child up? And you may have, you know, one may have their opinion about that, but if we could lift the judgment off, and that's why we're creating a very sacred space in it, on Being Mom
mm-hmm.
TV show, because I don't want people to come in thinking, well, I'm just going to be judged because I'm a bad human being, I'm a bad parent. No, 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 no. I think why it brings up this visceral feeling in some people is because, you know, we conceive, we get pregnant, we have a child. But that doesn't mean that you are equipped with the life tools that it is going to take to be a balanced, nurturing, loving human being parent. And so I think there's an incredible amount of defensiveness on the part of parents who they themselves, you know, of course, as you know this as a coach, we have cycles of our upbringing, of violence, of
mm-hmm.
sexual abuse, of, I mean, being told we're not enough. And so I think that's what gets sparked in the mind and in the hearts of some, quote, parents who feel that they're under attack. And I actually feel, and I know this may be a strong statement, but I actually feel that our culture, our modern culture, and I'll just speak for America, but I think it applies to many other cultures around the world.
Okay.
It's almost as though it's already set up to fail us.
How so?
As we are overworked. We are not allowed to be with our children in the very crucial formative bonding attachment time that we need with our children in order to create almost like an investment. Imagine like it's a bank account and we're putting in our coins and our, you know, our dollars as this investment that will pay dividends down the road. And when you take away that experience, you're left with sort of picking up the pieces along the way down the road. And it can be, I mean, you only need to look at studies of high levels of depression in children, the highest that has ever been, you know, documented. You look at young children being put on very dangerous prescription drugs that without other solutions being sought at as to what is the root of of either the illness, the disease, you look at how much parents have to work just to survive. You look at how when people do become parents, I mean, people do get this even when they're not parents. If they're single or in a relationship, they get really stressed out just by dealing with the daily grind of life. So you add on top of that, now you're going to have a child or you have a few children. Most of the divorces happen in the first 7 years of a child's life. The highest statistics actually happen within the first 2 years. So can you imagine the layers upon layers of trauma that's happening in that child's life and what is setting the tone for how they receive the world? That it's, you know, and again, we're going to be talking about what's happening in the womb. From the first moment that first egg splits, our cells in our body are literally growing or protecting themselves. They are preparing themselves for the world that they're going to come into. Dr. Marcy Axness, who I know has been a guest of yours,
yes,
and is a brilliant, brilliant woman. She's going to be our resident expert on our show, and she is going to be going into detail as to just how precious this environment is, and when in the womb, even as the baby is born and the first, mm-hmm. I mean, we evolve so slowly as a species. I mean, the first the 4 to 6 months after we come out of a stomach or, you know, other parts, I won't say on radio.
yeah, we're adults here, we can say it.
Okay,
the stork brings
it.
Everybody knows that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. When we are birthed, we still are not fully formed yet. So there's still another 4 to 6 months to be protected. But the reason we have to come out is our brains and our would get so big that it literally wouldn't come out of, you know, the vaginal canal. So imagine when you look at a pregnant woman and you look at the stress and you look at the whirlwind of society and how it's moving at such a rapid pace. I mean, we are overwhelmed on so many levels. Our brain is still functioning the way it did 40,000 years ago. So imagine with all the information that we have, with all the overstimulation, and that's one of the big things we're going to be talking about, is overstimulation of children. So much stress that plays later on in their lives.
Can you give me some examples of that?
Of the overstress of children?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, I'll give you a couple. One of the biggest ones, and I'm going through that right now because I have a 3.5-year-old. My husband and I are very, very protective of the environment that she is exposed to, and there are strong evidence-based reasons for that. And one is not to overload her circuitry, her brain circuitry, mm-hmm. with this whole Head Start program that you see sweeping across the nation with emphasis on early academic, these really abstract concepts that are basically being introduced as early as 2 years old of getting a child to read. That's one example. So when you look at the way the brain's developing, a human being at that age, especially in the first 7 years of life, should not be going under all these very complex abstract stress. This is the time when they, you know, we're learning about our world, we're touching, we're feeling, we're learning about the world through our mouth, mm-hmm. we're crawling, we're in action. That's really that precious first 7 years of life. But when you look at some of my dear friends too, you know, are going through this. When you look at what is reflective in our society, I mean, you only need to walk into a toy store and see like this overwhelming array of colors and toys and overstimulation, and you see the children just almost looking like they've got these deer in the headlights going,
sure.
And it's too much. It's just way too much. We overschedule children, and you can see this by the studies that have been done to show just how stressed out children are, to a point where even our suicide rates have gone up between 5 and 18 years old, which is shocking in the last 30 years.
You're telling me that there are 5-year-olds committing suicide?
Yes. It sounds absolutely horrifying and and almost as though it's science fiction. But they are finding ways. You see, when the human being doesn't know what to do, it will self-regulate in the only way it knows. It can do that in a healthy way, or it can do that in an unhealthy way.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is a lot of young children who are under a lot of stress, and by the way, a lot of parents are not going into this saying, I need to stress my kid out. They think they're doing, you know, well-meaning stuff.
Right.
So I want to be very clear about that. But what they don't realize is that too much stimulation, whether it's academics, giving them 100 choices, you know, when they're only 3, they're not looking for that. They're looking for balance. They're looking for a calm environment because mm-hmm. they're still discovering. They have this brain that is so delicate. It's forming itself. So you take a 5-year-old who's really overstressed, and, you know, some of these stories, I mean, again, they sound unbelievable, but children self-medicate. They can do that by we produce a lot of cortisol when we're stressed, and it's one of the mm-hmm. most toxic chemicals that we produce in our body. So imagine, as a human being, producing cortisol when we're stressed is bad enough, but can you imagine a tiny little body
wow.
producing that kind of stress hormones? So violence, aggressiveness, maybe getting access to prescription pills, finding destructive ways of how to self-regulate, because they just don't know how. I mean, you only need go to orphanages around the world to be able to see what happens to a child when it is not touched, when it is not stimulated, not overstimulated,
mm-hmm.
stimulated with attachment, with love. The longer these children get left in the orphanages, especially from birth, the harder it is. Their brains literally shrink, because we as a species are really a species that has to be stimulated and nurtured in order for our brains to grow. So if we're not doing that in the early years of working with our children and connecting with our children and really holding sacred their environment to let them be children, can you imagine the effects that we see as adults, which mm-hmm. end up going to therapists or needing to get help? This is a result of so much of that.
So why are so many people pushing this on children and on parents? I should say on parents to push on mm-hmm. their children. Why?
I think it's a combination of things, and I won't say I can answer all of that, you know, with a simple answer, but I think there is profit to be gained
mm-hmm.
by certain institutions that push certain academic systems in place, and going earlier to get the parents to get involved earlier so they can
mm-hmm.
get them to sign on the dotted line. And there's a lot of money that's being made. I also think that there is a lack of confidence that a lot of parents feel, even if it's on a subconscious level, to feel like, I'm missing out. In fact, Dr. Marcy Axness told me about this. There's actually a phraseology that the millennials coined called FOMO, which is fear of missing out. Fear of missing out. And a lot of parents, as you know, I'm sure we've all heard this. It's keeping up with the Joneses. Well, this one's in Little League. This one's got a trophy over here. This one's going to an Ivy League school. Okay, we got to get it earlier. The earlier we get it, the better. Look, I fell in that trap before
mm-hmm.
I really started looking at what was happening with the brain of a child, of a human being. I was trapped in there because of my cultural upbringing. I mean, I have Indian blood, and that's all about education. And no surprise, Indian women, funnily enough, are one of the most stressed out people in the world.
Mm.
And Indian children go through so much stress with the pressures of early education. I mean, in Japan, you know, there's a lot of suicide among students because they can't take the pressure. So I think that subconsciously and unconsciously, a lot of parents feel they have to do it and don't realize they have a choice to do it. Now, this is where I say sometimes we set our societies up to fail. If you look at the schools that promote a real nurturing environment and respect the brain development of a child that will produce the balanced, self-regulating, thriving human being as an adult. There are absolutely wonderful programs that do that. You know, Waldorf School is an example of this.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody can afford Waldorf. So what do you do then? You're going to send your child to public school.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually worked with the public school system, and you know, I have to be very careful how I say this, but what I have experienced is a system that is very heavily based on results, which I'm not saying that results aren't a good thing, but sometimes we have to question how we get those results. It's not by any means necessary. I think one of the things I experienced when I was working with certain school systems, public school systems, is they're just overloaded. They think, well, if we do more tests, if we just get them to learn their ABCs earlier, that'll fix it. But it's like this thread in the fabric of life, and you pull one part of it and the whole blanket starts to sort of unravel. And it's frustrating. It'll take time to develop. I believe shows like Being Mom and others, because I know so many people who are going to be on the show who are working in their respective fields, who are the real rock stars of how we're looking at shifting the way we're looking at how we raise children. So I have hope. I have tremendous mm-hmm. hope that this is already in motion. And also with people like yourself who are coaching, who are nurturing, who are there as the soft landing for people who need help. I believe that these healing workers, which is the work that you do, the work that I do, and many others who have been on your show and who are out there, I believe this is where it's going to eventually become so mainstream in a way that it's going to turn sort of the, quote, traditional systems, whether it's education or, you know, child rearing, it's going to turn it on its head, and it's going to open up a whole other paradigm of how we're looking at what it really takes to build a peaceful society, what it mm-hmm. takes to build and raise a balanced, thriving human being. Because when you look at what's being discussed, and I'm talking about mainstream television, and I want to also let your audience know that we are going to be independently producing our television shows and distributing them nationally and internationally. And the reason we're going this way, it's a harder way, and I would love to be able to then, you know, share with your audience what we would really love your help and support with.
Sure.
Is that these topics that we're going to be discussing, they're just not being talked about on a mainstream level, mainstream television level, you know. But this is the cornerstone when we talk about these problems that we have. The cornerstone of why society is the way it is because of the traumas not being addressed. And it's so much easier sometimes to stick a bigger Band-Aid on it instead of taking the Band-Aid off, go inside that festering wound and go underneath and clean from the very bottom and try to purge. You know, and that's why when you look at our society, we sort of have, you know, the Zuckerberg, so to speak,
mm-hmm, sure.
And then we have the tragic scenarios of the Sandy Hooks of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two human beings that had very different outcomes in many different ways. And it's a tragedy when our human beings don't make it, you know, when we do see these just awful headlines in the news. And we want to get to a place, you know, where the brain, it's a very complex computer. So we want to get to the heart of how are we installing programs? What is the process of uninstalling the programs when they no longer serve us? It's all about uploading and downloading. And sometimes we get viruses. So how do we go
I mean, you're mentioning Sandy Hook, and
yes.
You're talking about like there's this guy, this young guy who did this horrible thing.
Right.
But what could have? I mean, I don't know what could have helped a guy like that. It sounded like he was like damaged from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. It's possible there could have been a lot of damage then. Of course, I can't speak to it as an authority because I don't know his case history. But what mm-hmm. I can say is, I believe, and I believe the people who are going to be the experts coming on Being Mom believe that as a society, we can have much more compassion and empathy, and we can do a lot of preventative measures when we understand how the brain develops. Because, and I'm sure you know this with the work that you do, as a human being, the way our brains are set up, if we are raised, first of all, I'm not talking about neurological damage to the brain itself. I'm talking about, well, that's a huge part of it, because that could be part of that too, you know, for people like this gentleman, the young gentleman. And when we look at, for instance, let me give you an example. Even before the Grecian times, when the army wanted to raise the warriors, soldiers, they would absolutely consciously separate a baby from its mother as soon as it was born. They separated it immediately.
Yes.
They knew that back then. So, I mean, that's kind of scary, okay? Because they knew what happens 45 minutes after a child is born. There is an absolute orchestra dance that happens between the hormones of mother and child. And a lot of them, that times that gets cut and separation occurs. So when you're looking at the brain, you're looking at the frontal lobe, you're looking at the neocortex, which is the front of the brain where, you know, we develop empathy, compassion, you know, multilateral thinking. And then you go over to the back of the brain and you think, wow, that's where our reptilian brain is, and that's all about fight or flight, that it's all about responding to our environment. So studies have been done to show that when you look, literally look at some of the brain maps of people who have committed some of the most heinous crimes or who live in cultures of war, their reptilian brain is big. It's bigger than their neocortex, their frontal lobes. And I think if we understand that, and we're going to make it incredibly accessible, when people really understand that, they, like, I cannot walk around right now, and I'm telling you this, Andrew, in all seriousness.
Okay.
I literally cannot stop looking at people's brains and wondering what parts of their brains are leading them, or what parts of their brains are bigger, smaller.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I know, right? I was in Target the other day, and I couldn't help myself because I saw this. I saw somebody arguing with somebody else, and then in another aisle, I saw this woman like yelling at her kid, and I was literally picturing almost like an animation of her, the back of her reptilian brain like pulsing.
That's so funny.
And even while I didn't like what I experienced by witnessing it, I had more compassion. It doesn't mean I like it. But I had more compassion. And I think if we have more compassion, then we can go to understanding. Then we can say, oh, my Lord, I don't want that. I don't want that. What can I do? What can I do? How can I change things? How can I shift my behavior,
right,
shift my language to make things happen in a more evolved manner?
Mm. By the way, you'll never see me on a beach saying, hey, look at the brains on her. I just thought I'd let you know.
With another B. That's funny.
Yeah. Oh, those are not, that's what I call a set of brains.
There you go.
Okay.
Hey, yeah, that's funny. I like that.
Thank you. That's where my mind. I was also thinking, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Defending Your Life with Albert Brooks.
Yes, I have.
And in this afterlife where everybody knows the exact percentage of brain they use. And they use it as a sort of ego thing. Oh, I use 54% of my brain.
Right. No, it's astonishing. No, it's really astonishing what we do. And no, it's really interesting. And this is why I'm excited to get people to come and support us, because we need this kind of programming. We need this kind of programming because it's, you know, we're going to be having coaches like yourself come on the show and talk. I mean, this subject is so loaded on so many different levels, and that's why, you know, we want people to come and may I share what we would really love help with right now?
Absolutely.
Okay. We would love people, and I don't know if you be, I think you said you might be able to create a link for us.
I have done so.
Oh, that's fantastic. I would love people to go to our beingmom.tv, beingmom.tv, which I believe you put in your on your show description.
On the show page.
And yes, and come and support our Indiegogo campaign. We are raising some money to be able to, we actually have an extremely conscious company who are going to get us the big dollars with appropriate sponsors who are going to be funding the 26 episodes that we're going to be doing for the first season, which are one-hour episodes. Then we're going to be distributing this nationally and then internationally. So we need help to raise the initial retainer fee to be able to do this. And we would love all the help and support. We're also reaching out to a few celebrity conscious mothers and fathers because, you know, we need the push behind us. And I think what makes this such an investment for everyone, not just parents, is because imagine when you go to work and you have that coworker who's not particularly very friendly or makes your life a living hell, you have to wonder what was going on. What was going on earlier that led that person to be the person that they are today? Because what people don't truly understand is when you are a parent and you're parenting your children, your choices actually affect three generations down the road. So you're creating a parenting legacy, you know, of how you're preparing people to become adult people. And that's why I say this permeates every aspect of our society. And that's why, you know, we are doing this independently, even though it will be on national and international television. Mm-hmm. We are building from the community up and from the outside in. Because one of the things that I come from an entertainment background, so I know how it works. I do know how it works. And I don't want the content of this show to be liquefied and diluted to a point where the real golden nuggets are not going to come through. You know, we are going to have a lot of different topics, some really heavy, serious topics, but also incredibly inspirational and transformational in every area of human life that you can imagine, because it's all connected. It's all connected. If you're an uncle, if you're a grandfather, if you're a man who, you know, a young man who's going to become a man, I mean, from an auntie to grandparents who are raising their children and the stress of them and how it's affecting our society. So, you know, we really want people to, again, come to our beingmom.tv. You'll see an Indiegogo link, which is our funding platform, Indiegogo link, which I know you have the short link for, and be able to support us. And literally for as little as $10, I mean, we go from $10 to $2,500, it can make a huge difference. And what I'm really excited to say is that Dr. Marcy Axness is supplying and gifting, because everyone who makes a donation gets a gift, is gifting the contributors with her amazing authority, calming authority for mothers. Mm-hmm. You know, she's doing a unique 7-step parenting tool, and she's going to be, I think another one she's doing is, you know, speaking to your child's subconscious. So she's basically giving the audience or the contributors her magical, really inspiring work, which I'm so excited about, because people just are not talking like this on a mainstream level, and that's what makes this so exciting. So, you know, whoever's listening to this show right now, this show is about you. It's about stories of inspiration and empowerment from everyday people for everyday people.
Well, I'm going to give you the little bit.ly thing I made for you.
Great.
I made you a bit.ly.
I love
just
a bit.ly.
Love saying bit.ly. It sounds like a really weird little car.
You know, it does.
Bit.ly. I used to have a bit.ly,
like
but I don't
an
have
English
a bit.ly.
I love
so
it.
A bit.ly, if anybody had no idea what I'm talking about, bit.ly is a site, bit.ly. And you actually make the site on bit.ly.com, but when you make the bit.ly, it's bit.ly/whatever it is. And then usually there's a short random strings of things, but you can also customize them. And you could take a really long URL with lots of codes and things that you can never possibly pass around, not to mention to somebody, and make it sayable and easily disseminatable. And so if you go to bit.ly, which you could use www, you don't have to, HTTP, you could just say bit.ly, bit.ly/beingmomgogo.
Oh, that's terrific.
Being
oh,
Mom
my goodness.
Gogo. You just do that. It'll take you right to the Indiegogo for that thing. Being Mom Gogo.
Wow.
So now you can actually say, you can be online in the restaurant. Hey, go to bit.ly. If you know what bit.ly is, or bit.ly/beingmomgogo.
I love that. I wish I'd known that earlier. My goodness.
Well, that's what you know. My other life is I'm secretly a total geek, and I know all this good stuff.
I love it. I love that. I respect you guys so much.
Thank you.
Your brains are working in a whole way that mine does. I appreciate it, but I don't have that talent. And what I wanted to also say and encourage your listeners is to, when you go to the website or go to the bit.ly/beingmomgogo, that we have a short 2-minute video, and when you watch that, you actually see me explain just the impact of what we've already had and what will affect the lives of millions of people across the planet. And I just did a conference with Dr. Marcy Axness at the California Women's Conference with Mallika Chopra, Deepak Chopra's daughter. Hmm. And the response, because we did it all about, you know, supermom going from sane to centered. And the response was so overwhelming because afterwards people would come up to us and say, I never thought about it that way before. And I even had people come up and say, thank you for making me not feel like I failed. And that I, you know, that it gave them the courage and the incentive to maybe be mindful of the words they use, how they speak to their children, how they speak to their partners, you know, how they speak to their coworkers. Just respecting the dignity of another human being. It really just changes your whole biology. When you know better, you do better. And just with the work you're doing, you know, it's just, I feel so blessed to have been working and surrounded by this kind of consciousness. And I realized just how many people out there, unfortunately, are not surrounded by that because of whatever reasons,
I always say, Sarah, that the majority of people in this country, they don't know it, but if you've ever seen the movie The Matrix.
Yes.
Most people are in The Matrix.
Right. That's right.
And they, you know, of course, the people in the Matrix, that they don't know they're in the Matrix. This is their world. This is their universe.
That's right.
What they know. And this is one of my favorite sayings is, you don't know what you don't know.
Right, right.
And the truth is that unless you knew that there was more possibility than you could possibly even have imagined, you may not even care to know about this. But the truth is, there are certain people, you and I are in this small group of people who are who have escaped or are escaping from the Matrix, and we're finding that there are completely other ways of looking at life and thinking and doing and being that will enable a completely different kind of a world if we can enroll more people into seeing that.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. You hit it right on. And I get so excited when I think about the possibilities and I think about looking at the face of someone. And you know, I've spoken to people who are very, very wealthy to homeless. And when you recognize the dignity of another human being, regardless of the stuff or lack of stuff, and you just go to the heart, I'm not saying, you know, it's about winning every single human being. I mean, of course, you want that, right, for the betterment of society. But when you unpeel the layer of the onions and you just connect with the soul, with the heart of another human being, It is extraordinary what happens. And, you know, our goal with a mission, it's really, this is really a movement, you know, this evolutionary parenting paradigm shift. It's really about unveiling what's behind the stuff. I mean, with the work you're doing, it's the same thing. It's just a different form and a different way and the same way, you know, it's all connected. And that's what excites me the most, because this can be, you know, can be very, can be a challenging road. You know, you're going against the grain in some ways of a mindset where people feel, well, that's just the way it is, and I can't do anything about it. And you're going, no, it's not. And that's why I think, you know, when you think of, say, an Anthony Robbins, you think of somebody in his background. Sometimes I have to pull him as an example, because he came from a really not so pleasant upbringing. And
no, I talk about him all the time, by the way, so that's fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Yeah. So I mean, and you think about that, and you can sometimes only use an example of someone who's already done it, because other people think you're nuts, you know.
So his voice is in my head all the time, and he's one of my role models and heroes.
Yeah, he's amazing. And when you see the what's possible, and you have to be in an environment like that, and that's why, you know, with being mom, we have to produce this independently. Then when you gain a certain, you know, leverage or whatever you want to call it, that's different. But to us, to be able, because we know what we need to do. We know the kind of people that are going to come on. And I have seen this, and I've witnessed this. When I have seen some of these people go on mainstream, some of the mainstream shows, and I want to be very clear about this. I want Being Mom to be as mainstream as possible. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to, you know, that suddenly a big network's going to say, oh, yeah, we want to put you at 5 o'clock. Because, first of all, they don't know who we are, what's coming, and it's going to challenge them. But when you get the love, the respect, you honor the community, that's when you make shift happen. That's when you make change happen. And so that's why I said we're going from the outside in, from the community up. And when you surround yourself in that environment with people like yourself, with the Anthony Robbins of the world, with other great mentors out there, people who are doing the most extraordinary work, and people who are going to be on our show, that's when you have hope. And then you say, that's it. I am not giving up. I am not giving up. And for every child that is being born in such destitution and abuse, or you see mothers and fathers who are just not living in a way that is their highest potential, that's why I say, you know what? God, give me the strength. I'm not giving up on these people, and I'm going to keep moving forward. And that's why we need the support of your listeners and, you know, anyone who's out there who can come and help us. Because I'm telling you this, I am not giving up. This is for all of humanity. Whether you're a parent or not, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Absolutely. So, you know, we have like, you know, 6 minutes or so left in the show.
Yeah.
Definitely like to talk more about like dads, because we've touched on it
absolutely.
A bit. But I'd like to hear more about how particularly you include dads, and what you would like to say about it. I've been involved. Mm-hmm. I'm not a parent, but I've been certainly involved in a lot of in things involving fathers. I've helped with a community called Fathering Forum. And
beautiful.
I personally did, you know, participated in a workshop many years ago, which is a huge foundation of who I am, called the Men's Weekend, in which
beautiful.
I got to really understand what my dad's job was as a dad and my job as a son. It really helped me to have a completely different relationship today with him than I did when I was a young man. So I'd love to hear some of your perspective around that.
Absolutely. I love men and I love fathers, and yes, you know, horrible things happen in life. When you look at the turn of, say, you take the Industrial Revolution, the real role and the myth of male power, and I'm not talking about sort of patriarchal systems throughout time, absolutely, they have been there for thousands of years. But when you look at the Industrial Revolution and you looked at what happened after that, and you really started to see that children were just not working beside their parents anymore. You know, they were going off to the factories and what have you. There was a real cord that was cut, an umbilical cord between father and their children. And I heard this expression and it really touched me. And it said that children, they don't get their fathers, they get their temperament. They're not really getting their fathers. So the parenting legacy becomes about, am I getting you or am I getting your temperament? When you come home from work and you don't have time, you're stressed out, you're trying to figure out how to pay the bills and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so when, so when I started looking at, you know, how men, the women's movement has grown exponentially. I mean, it has since the women's movement in the 60s. Women's movements have definitely grown in a way that men's movements have not. Dr. Warren Farrell, who wrote the book The Myth of Male Power, he's an extraordinary man. We had the pleasure of being in his home. He really started the men's movement, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks at length about really this sort of this illusion of thinking that men have power because, you know, there is a patriarchal system around the world predominantly. But it's not true. That doesn't mean that a man is not yearning to be heard. And I think this is a really confusing time for a lot of men because, you know, women, they want their men to be strong. But then when he cries, they get upset. But they want him to be sensitive. They want him to open the door. They want him to I mean, it's just so confusing. And also the role of the fathers in their children's lives. And what we want to do is we want to honor the place of men and honor the place of fathers, because at the end of the day, no matter what, I cannot teach a boy how to become a man.
That's only right.
A man can do that. And the same, you know, for a girl and a woman. But I think sometimes we, when you look at television, we buffoon. Not when I say we, not me personally, but, you know, television, if you look at the comedies that are on there, they really make men into these buffoons. It's like mother knows best kind of thing, and they make men look stupid.
Yeah.
And it's really insulting. I'm not a fan, and I understand, look, we need to have jokes, we need to have, you know, entertainment, but I think when it's consistently an image that we see of men, it just breaks my heart. So what,
but you know,
we
it really gets
to,
me, yes. If you look at those yeah. TV shows and you look at who's writing them, they're men for the most part.
Exactly. They're doing what, again, I think we're all sort of brainwashed to be on this gerbil wheel, to do what works, to do what makes money, to dumb things down, and not to honor who we are. But in order to honor who we are, it requires a major shift, and that's why on Being Mom, we're going to be talking about how essential it is to have the presence of the father in a child's life. How, you know, we're at an epidemic when we see the loss of the role of the father with their children, and you see how men, I have seen a room of 350 men of all ages, colors, and creeds who are still living the trauma of not having their fathers there. And nobody's really talking about this. There are some, you know, there are underground groups and there are more independent groups that are talking about this. And Oprah has done some lovely episodes with this too. But in terms of a major cultural shift of how we look at men and how we look at hearing their voice, hearing their passion, their needs and their wants, because, you know, a lot of men are scared to come forward too. They don't want to look, you know, as though they're being... that they're being emasculated. And
that's
I think
right.
that's it. I think a lot of men have been emasculated, and I don't want that to be the voice on Being Mom. And part of me sort of questioned the whole Being Mom, because I don't want people to think it's not about being everyone. That's why, you know,
right.
the operative word is the being. And that's what we're going to do on the show. We're going to have groups in. I want to go into communities, because we're going to have a studio presence, but a huge part of our show is we're going to be going into communities. We're going to be setting up town hall meetings with various subjects. We're going to be going into institutions and to communities where
so,
amazing
Sarah,
things
have to
are happening.
Stop you, unfortunately, because
sure.
we have less than a minute to go.
Okay.
We're down
okay.
to our
well,
last
people,
40
please
seconds,
come.
So everyone, please thank you, Sarah Rippard, so much for Being Mom TV, for being with me tonight. Everyone, the links are on my show page. Beingmom.tv is the website. And we will be back here very soon on Coach's Corner. I want to thank everyone for listening tonight. And go out there and have an amazing week and a great Memorial Day weekend. So thank you again and good night.
Good night. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello.